Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is the one and only ScaryCast. I'm Dr. John Stamey, and it is so good to be here tonight. We've got a great show, we've got great panelists, and we've got a superb guest. So let's get right down to it. Anyway, just glad to be here with everybody. First of all, one of our hosts from Niagara Falls, Canada, the one and only Mark Johnston. How are you doing tonight, Mark?
I'm doing great. Hi, John and Robin. I'm really looking forward to tonight's discussion and hearing what she has to say and her wisdom when it comes to Bigfoot and everything about that, the evidence. I'd love to hear what her wisdom on everything about that.
Oh, thanks, Mark.
Nice
to meet you.
I'll tell you what,
nice to meet you.
Robin's got some serious knowledge here, and our guest, the Queen of ScaryCast, who is now our guest tonight, so she's no longer a co-host, but just for this evening, she is our guest, and we're so glad to have her, Robin McCray. How are you doing tonight, Robin? It is so good to have you here with us.
I'm doing great, John. Thanks for having me.
You better believe it. We're glad to have you here, and we're glad to have Mark with us. We're expecting Dr. Trey Donaway. He's a little bit late, but he said he would be here, so we're looking forward to having him. And Devin is boarding a plane for London, and we got lots of cool things to talk about. So, Robin, I want to set the stage for what we're going to be talking about. You and Pat are considered Bigfoot habituators. Now, what does that really mean?
When you are a habituator, and there, believe it or not, there are really thousands and thousands of them across, excuse me, the United States, Canada, all over the world. Okay, we're not like, you know, the only one. There's a ton of them. Basically, it's people that have them live around them. You have ongoing contact. You interact with them as well as have your own experiences. And this is something that I've done since I was a toddler. Pat's had them around him on and off while he was growing up. He had interactions with them even before him and I got together. I met him because a mutual friend of ours had said he was having interactions and just had some questions. Would I talk to him? And we talked for almost 2 years and finally decided we would actually, you know, meet up and meet each other, and we've been together ever since. You know, I think he's the only one on the planet that can withstand the craziness that is what's called my life.
I got to say, I know Pat. Pat is one of the nicest people God
ever
put on the planet.
Pat is a good guy.
He really is.
Yeah,
there isn't
anybody else that could live through me.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, you're definitely one of a kind. And by the way, we have the one and only the Surgeon General of ScaryCast is now with us, Dr. Trey Donaway. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
Good. I'm sorry I was a little delayed, a little technical difficulty.
I'm with you now.
Trey, I'm so glad you're there. I told John, I said, we got to have Trey. He's the one that asked me all the questions, although Mark very graciously stood up and said, I will as well. So that was made me feel better.
So we've got a great crew tonight. We really do. And, Trey, I had just asked Robin what a Bigfoot habituator is, and she basically said it's a family that basically has some land, and they are friendly with the Bigfoot. Is that correct, Robin?
Yeah, and, you know, pretty much. However, it doesn't have to be your land. Like, I know people that habituate with them that go to a park that lives near their home. And, you know, everybody assumes, because they live out in the woods, that if you don't live by the woods, you're not going to get interaction. That couldn't be further from the truth. I know multiple people that live in the city that have contact. I've worked with people that live in the city that have contact. I used to live in Michigan, and we are hopeful to be able to go back there. But in Detroit, Michigan. They actually had one that was living in one of the abandoned buildings. And one night a family was driving home. They had gone out house hunting that day. And it was 7, 8 o'clock at night. It was dark out, you know, relatively like wintry out. And it stepped out of a broken bay window of the house and walked across the lawn towards the corner. And when it got to the corner, it turned around and saw their car coming. It turned around and ran back and jumped back in the bay window into the house. So is it more prominent with woods? Absolutely. But don't ever feel that it limits it, because they will go in the city. They used to go, when I lived in Shiawassee County, there's a very small town there by the name of New Lothrop, and just super, super tiny. And they had a pizza parlor there that had a dumpster in it. And it was regular thing for people to see them going and getting stuff out of the dumpsters. You know, I mean, they really don't care. They don't differentiate.
So they will do dumpster diving.
Oh, big time. They used to go, when I lived in Michigan, I lived over on the western side of the state, about halfway up the mitten, and about 4 miles from my house was a tavern. It wasn't like a regular bar. It was very family-oriented. You could go in there and get burgers and fries and play, you know, the pinball games and pool and that kind of thing. But they also served alcohol. And I am not a person that likes the taste of alcohol. I don't mind other people drinking it. I don't care for it. So I don't drink it. I think the most I've ever really drank is, we did a conference and John made these really great mimosas, and I didn't drink a whole lot of that. I'm just not a drinker, so I don't normally carry it in my home. And I would get up in the morning and I'd go out in the woods where I would put food out for them all the time, which is not advisable, but I didn't know that at the time. And my group was really passive, so they never gave me any problems. I would go out there where the food was at. There was enough empty bottles that looked like a party for Guns N' Roses out there. Like, it was crazy, absolutely crazy. And then I found out that they were going and pulling these booze bottles out of the dumpsters behind the tavern. I mean, my entire part of that section of the woods was all booze bottles. And I'd go out there and clean it all up. Next morning, there they are again. Igor Borsev and I took a beer with a screw tap and took it out there, and we sat the bottle in a bucket for them, and it was winter out. And, you know, that's the other myth, is that they're not around in the wintertime, and that's just ridiculous because they definitely are. And him and I walked out there the next morning, and they had twisted it, the top off, and the top was laying on the ground, and half the bottle was empty.
Okay.
And he said he was going to go back in the house to get it.
They do like an occasional beer. Would that be a correct assumption?
I think it's safe to say that if it was up to them, they'd be alcoholics. Let me tell you. They actually really do. Like, I mean, they don't drink a lot. Obviously, they don't have access to it. I've never heard of any place where they turned any of it down.
Okay. Well, I had for a while an entity that would take apples that I put on top of my hedge right next to my apartment. And they tended to disappear after two or three days. And then I got so busy and I couldn't do it. But I'll tell you what, I think they're out there. Oh, for sure, I think they're out there. And I think they kind of enjoy some of the things that we do, which is good fruit, you know, apples and things like that. They might enjoy a beer or two, and that's great. There's nothing wrong with a beer or two. It's not gonna kill you, you know. 40
Yeah, because honestly, yeah, as big as they are, I mean, you're talking hundreds of pounds, up to 1,000 pounds, 1,200 pounds, depending on the size. That is the last thing you want to see drunk. I mean, really. I mean, I've never seen any of them drunk, but I wouldn't want to.
And Robin, that makes so much sense. It really does. But anyway, I want to open up the floor to our panelists. I want to give Mark a chance to ask a question, and then Trey, and then
sure,
we'll kind of go back and forth with me adding a little bit of color, because I've had a lot of color over at your house. I'm going to tell you what, that bright red-brown
my house is a little unique.
It is.
Believe it or not, John, this is calmer than it was when I was in Michigan. And you know how crazy it is right here. This is calm. Opposed to Michigan.
And I want to get this story out real quickly. We're all sitting there, you and me and Pat and Janice Carter and her daughter and me. We're all sitting in your living room, and I heard somebody run up the stairs. And I bolted like a madman, and there was nobody there. So we all heard it. I said, did you hear it? And in the middle of the yeses, I ran in to try to find it. Okay. And then I'm sleeping in the pink room. The pink room is where Holly used to sleep, Janice's daughter. And I was in there. I was asleep. And I heard somebody come walking up the stairs because the stairs are right next to the pink room. Okay, it's just a bedroom upstairs. So I heard someone coming up, and I figured, well, it's Pat, because you guys used to have some kind of pets, you know, in the bedroom across the hallway.
Yeah.
And I said, well, that's it's probably Pat, you know. And then a couple minutes later, I heard somebody else come walking up the stairs. I said, well, that must be Robin. You know, who knows why she's coming up. But then a couple minutes later, I heard somebody else come walking up the stairs. And I started smelling a rat. I didn't know what I was smelling, but it didn't smell good. So I said, well, I'm going to be ready. So just another minute or so later, somebody came walking up the stairs, and I was armed. I was there at the door, and as soon as the perpetrator got up to the top of the stairs, I blew that door open, and there was nobody there. And I said, oh, John, you're just a dummy. That's a ghost. And I closed the door, went back to bed, and that was it.
Well, yeah, we've got two of those here. But the thing is, and I just want to add to that, the Bigfoot will also, they can be in flesh. They are a multidimensional being. They're a human hybrid, but they're multidimensional. They can go from flesh and blood to shadow form in a blink of an eye. And I've witnessed them do this, as well as thousands of other people have witnessed them, where they go into shadow form, and they literally will walk right through your wall, and you're in your house. And it sounds totally batshit crazy until you experience it, and then you become a firm believer. Now, I was upstairs in our blue bedroom, and I was on my tablet. I was on a video call with Turtle Man. I'm sure lots of people know who Turtle Man is, and his girlfriend,
Turtle Man,
and she is the dearest thing.
He's the dude. He's great. He's had a lot of experiences. He's a nice guy, don't you think?
Oh my gosh, he's wonderful, and his girlfriend is every bit as sweet as he is, and they've now gotten into the Bigfoot and had a lot of success. And so we were talking, and I heard a male, very, very large male voice in the hallway, and I thought, what in the world? And the dogs had barked and just had acted crazy, and I thought, you know, who's at the house? Like, this makes no sense to me. And Pat was downstairs. I went up there because I was going to have this conversation, and it's quieter because the dogs are downstairs. Anybody that's been here knows tons of dogs. So if you hear one barking at night, that's all normal. And so I thought, well, why are the dogs going crazy? It made no sense to me. And then I heard, it was the heaviest footsteps I've ever heard, up and down the hallway. And then I heard these footsteps and these two male voices, and they were very, very deep, very, very loud and booming, talking in the hallway, and they walked up to the door. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't hear Pat downstairs. I didn't know if somebody had broken in, you know, if something had happened to him. The dogs by then had gone stone quiet. Now I'm getting a little nervous because I couldn't figure out what it was. Most people know I do remote viewing. So I try to remote view it, and all I can see are these big shadows. They very clearly were a Bigfoot. And I'm trying to listen to what Suzanne and Turtle Man are telling me, and I'm trying to focus on what's going out there, because at this point I really am like, what in the world? And I heard them walking up and down the hallway, and this went on for a good 10, 15 minutes, and it did not stop. And they would come right up to the door, and I would hear them outside the door. So I get done with my conversation, and I get off. I go, I open the door. There's nothing there. I went downstairs, and I said to Pat, I said, you know, at first I thought, because the dogs had barked, he had let somebody in the house. And they had went upstairs, and I thought, why he would let them upstairs, I have no idea. But that was my first thought. And I asked him, he's like, no, nobody's here. He had no clue that any of it had even gone on. But I know what I heard. I know what I saw when I remote viewed, and I know how heavy those footsteps were. They were too big to have been made by one of us. I mean, there's just no way. But we've had countless people, John included, that have seen the little girl and the older gentleman. My daughter sleeps up in that blue bedroom. And the older gentleman woke her up. I was doing a conference in Michigan, and he literally tugged on her shirt and woke her up and told her his name. And the thing that was so unique about that was he had told Pat his name months before that. Pat was taking a shower, and he just started talking to
What's his name, so that the next time I'm there, I can talk to him?
Yeah, Pat, do you remember his name? Joseph, believe it or not. And so while I'm in Michigan, he tugged on Caitlin and woke her up out of a sound sleep, and he said, my name is Joseph. Pat had only told me his name. He had not told Caitlin. Nobody knew his name at that time. And when I came home, she's like, Mom, I already told Pat about it, but, you know, this is what happened. He was, like, trying to warn me about something, but I didn't know what he wanted. And he told her his name was Joseph. And she said, I don't know if that's right. And I said, it's 100% right. Like, there's no way she would have known that had she not experienced it. But, yeah, Janice, when she was here, watched the doors opening and close up there all the time.
Now, I don't doubt that, because that upstairs is so creepy. At least the next time I come up there. So you say your daughter is up there as well?
Oh, yeah. When her and her fiancé first moved in, it was kind of a paranormal meltdown, because she grew up around the stuff, so it really, not that it doesn't upset her at times, but she is more like, I just am tired of dealing with it. This has been going on forever. He, on the other hand, knew that these things were real, but I don't think when he got here, he anticipated the onslaught or the level of it here. I mean, we have Bigfoot, we have Dogman, we have Lizardman, we have Elementals, we have Cat People, we have Dimensionals, we have, God knows, we have ETs coming out of rear end. We have UFOs above the house. I have portals opening and closing in the front yard. And I have pictures of all of these things. These aren't just things that I've seen. Pat's seen them. Everybody that's come here has seen things like this. So when they first got here, when he was coming down the road to the house, a Bigfoot stepped out from behind a tree and showed itself. And so then he got here, and he already knew these things existed. It was just, you know, they were very blatant. So, like, the first 2 weeks was kind of a meltdown, because he was like, they're running all over the backyard, they're jumping the fence, you got ETs in the front yard, you got UFOs above the house, you got Bigfoots running in every corner of the woods, you know, you've got all these crazy things going on, and it's like, there has to be some kind of consensus on what's allowed and what's not allowed. I said, there is. If they don't come in peace, I will zap back. You know, if they're going to be here, they have to be in peace. This house is protected. This house is bubbled. If they're not going to be nice, then they don't get to stay here. That is the agreement we have. You know, we don't let them all run through the house. There's certain ones that know that they have access to this house and certain ones that know they don't. But he came and got me one night because there was an ET right across from the driveway. And I saw it. He was out there watching it for the longest time, was popping up and down, looking around this bush and stuff. And he called me, and I went out there, and it was out there. I walked towards it. I mean, I walked to the end of the driveway, and when I did, it kind of ran back into the woods more. But then when I left the end of the driveway, it came back up towards the front again, you know. And he turned around, and he had night vision binoculars, and he was looking up, and there was like six ships up there. You know, and he was like, really, he wasn't frightened. I think it was just kind of like an sensory overload, I guess is the best way to put it. Now it doesn't faze him.
Well, now, I've got to say that it was like two Christmas Eves ago, I stood out there on the front porch with Pat. We had those night vision goggles, and we saw things moving back and forth in the woods across the street from you. And it was kind of scary. It would not be so scary now because I've experienced it, but I have seen it.
Yeah.
I will swear to my grave.
They're pretty good here. We haven't had aggressive foots here. We haven't had aggressive dogmen here. Nothing really has been aggressive. The only thing that I've ever had in this house that has been aggressive is I've had, I think, like three ET attacks that were pretty intense. And they were never repeated again. They are different factions, and they, after what went on, by the time it was over, they haven't come back. You know, had ETs all over the place, but just those were the only bad ones.
All right. Well, I tell you what. I want to make sure that Trey and Mark get to ask questions. Mark, your question first, then Trey, and then we'll go on to the next ones. Mark, what you got?
Okay, well, before this podcast, I wrote down a number of questions, and 4 and 5 are, what are their supernatural abilities, and what is the UFO connection? And since we're kind of, she's been touching upon that, I've always heard stories of them kind of have this cloaking ability, or ability to 100%. Be more evasive and this type of thing. And it always made me wonder if they're somehow tied in with extraterrestrials or UFOs, and
the best way to explain it is years ago, I asked them what they were. I mean, really, if you want to know something, they have their own language, written and otherwise. They also can speak our language. They can read. You know, they can draw. They can write. Maybe not penmanship as perfect as what we think ours is. Of course, mine is horrible, so anything above the way I write is good. But they are actually a human hybrid, okay? They're an ancient type of human. And I asked them years ago, and I want to say this was probably back in 2010, 11, somewhere in there, what they were. I used to go outside with them at 2 o'clock in the morning every night. They'd come and knock on the house until I went outside, and I just simply asked them. I mean, they've been mind-speaking with me since I was a child, so it wasn't hard to communicate, and I've communicated with them verbally as well. And they pointed to me. There were three of them together at the time. And they said, we're human like you. And then they pointed at the sky and said, and star people. And I thought, well, there you have it. I mean, they're going to know what they are better than I am. So then they eventually asked me to contact Melba Ketchum. And I didn't know Melba at the time. And they said, she's trying to prove we exist. She's the only one that knows the truth about us. Help her. And I'm thinking, I'm not a scientist. Okay, I don't know anything about DNA. I mean, I had all kinds of samples, but I didn't know what to do with them. So I knew somebody that knew her, and I said, you know, please let her know. I'm not a stalker. I'm not harassing her. The Foots told me to contact her. So she contacted me. She's still one of my dearest friends today and as legit as it gets. And so I said, I don't know what I'm supposed to do because I don't know how to do any of the things you're doing. I just don't. But I can communicate with them, and I can help you if you want my help. So I did. I helped her, you know, just paperwork, clerical stuff, you know, help book her on appointments, that kind of thing. Nothing outrageous. And a few weeks into it, she said, you've never asked me what they are. And I said, first, if you wanted me to know, you'd tell me. Second, I already asked them. They told me that you know what they are. So I'm assuming it's the same thing. From a scientific standpoint, and this is how she has to address it because she is a scientist, on the mitochondrial side, which is the mother, they are human. On the father's side, it is listed as unknown because when they test it, there's nothing in any database that she or any of the labs, she didn't test all the samples herself. I mean, she did a fair amount of testing prior, but she sent it out to the top labs in the country so that there was no way to discredit her, which people did anyway. And it all came back the same thing. Unknown, because they don't have anything to compare the father's side with. So they are literally listed as a human hybrid. if you ask them and you take the Ketchum study and put it off to the side, because these are not her words at this point, it becomes my words because I talk to them. The words that came out of their mouth said they were human and ET. ET would be on the father's side, human would be on the mother's side.
So is there a possibility that they're working with ET as potential, like a ground crew? Because, like, if you think about the stereotypical ET, like the small little guys, gray guys, or whatever else, I couldn't see them hiking up a side of a glacier like Bigfoot would, or in the woods, you know, doing what they're doing. Maybe, potentially, are they a genetically engineered hominid human-like being here for either foraging purposes or other some type of ET agenda being?
Most of your cryptids, and by that I mean some of the dogmen, the Bigfoot, the Goatman, the cat people, lizard meat. 90% of those are all created by the ETs. Okay, the government has stepped in because they are just as wonderful as can be, and they've created their own bunch of whacked out cryptids that they've cut loose. And some of those, because they've made them for various reasons. I mean, I can only speculate. This is not coming from anything that they've said. This is my own speculation. Would be, you know, human, that they've created these things for warfare. However, in my opinion, they can't be controlled. Now, there are people that I have seen on different podcasts. I don't know these people, so I can't vouch for them, that state that they've worked with the government and they've had their own government team of dogmen that they've used for various military things. But I that's only speculation on my part. I have not spoken with all those people, so I don't know. That's just what they put out there. As far as them working with the ETs, no, they do not. There are some that are not overly good, that different factions of ETs, not the ones that created them, but different factions have tried to get them to work with them. I'm not going to say they don't. You have to understand, these are a race of a people, just as we are. We have good people, we have bad people, we have pedophiles, we have rapists, we have murderers, we have, you know, psychopaths, mental illness, everything. They have this also. So just like with us, we have free will, so do they. So some may choose to go on that bad path, some may choose to be on the good one. Predominantly, they're good. Their love is a deeper love than we can even hope to experience. And when you are close with them and they allow you to feel that, and they do that by pushing that love through energy onto you, it will bring tears to your eyes because it's a much deeper love than we experience in our world. But with that also comes the bad, and the bad is very intense. You know, a lot of people think they're all bad because they've acted out or whatever, but if you're going into their area and their families are there and their children are there, they're going to protect them just as we would. You know, there are signs that they give, but there are some that are bad. There are some that are mentally unstable, just like we have with our people. So
can I have one more thing to add to that? Because
sure.
I'm from the Pacific Northwest, BC, British Columbia, Canada, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of Aboriginal and Indigenous stories and knowledge about Sasquatch
yeah.
in that area. Even they even make totem poles of it, and it's in their artwork and everything. And their stories are generally that they kidnap children. That was always the stories that had been passed down
yeah.
through the last 200
yeah.
years. Is there something
yeah.
with this abduction that's going on, either through their breeding or like, because there are stories as well where they kidnap people and force them to breed with them as well. So do you have any knowledge about what's going on here? Like, you're talking about bad,
yes.
the bad ones. What's going on here with that?
Okay, number one, as far as taking them and forcing them to breed with them, I will be honest with you and say it is not common, and it does. They also have their own laws. It does go against their laws. However, as with our people don't follow the laws all the time either. And because of the human lineage of ours and theirs, it is entirely possible. I've worked on cases where males or females have gotten fixated on males or females of our type humans. Is it possible? Yes. Do I think that they're like grabbing the women and, you know, they're going to force them to have their children or whatever? I'm not going to say that that doesn't happen. I don't think it's as dramatic or as sinister as it sounds. Do I think that it happens? I do, because there have been cases recorded that this has happened. It is not the normal. It is not common. As far as the taking of the children, there were certain tribes within the U.S., Canada, various places, that was a fear, that they did not work alongside and get along with the Native Americans. And they claim that the Native Americans stole their children as well, and they would steal each other's children. One thing about them, they are excessively maternal, excessively. And, again, their ways are not ours. People expect them to behave in manners that are very much like ours, and it just simply doesn't work that way because there is a difference. And do they take children? They do. Do all of them do that? 100% no. Okay, again, that is frowned upon. That goes against their laws. The elders don't like it. You know, the ancient ones don't like it, but you do get some that are bad, and they will take them. One of the main things that seems to set this off, when we are, and this is an example, okay, if we're at home and the kids are playing out in the yard, it's not uncommon, depending on the child's age, for one of the parents or both of the parents to be in the house, whether it's making a meal, doing laundry, relaxing, whatever. Their kids are in their yard, and they feel comfortable with that. Okay? I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. However, in a Bigfoot's mind, when they look in that yard and they see these children running around and they don't see a parent out there, they look at that and they say, this is a child without a clan. It's in need of protection. And they take it. They simply take it. And it's very unfortunate because most of them, not all, but a large majority of them die from the elements because our bodies are not made to live outside unprotected. 9 of them out of 10 are going to take their clothes off. They don't understand why we have clothing. There's some that actually like it. I've had them steal clothing out of bags that I had in my garage. I mean, why in the world they thought they'd fit any of it, I have no idea, but they did. There has been countless people that have witnessed them, you know, where they've grabbed clothing. There are people that have witnessed and seen them wearing animal skins, you know, and so it's not uncommon. It's just they don't normally do these things. But will they take a child? They absolutely will take a child. If they have a mate that's lost a child and is grieving, that male will want to go out and replace that child. You know, what I tell people, and I caution people with this all the time, and I try to get people to understand that when you're out in the woods and you have your kids, you really and truly, you don't put your child behind you, okay? If you're going to take a child out in the woods, and this is what I did with mine, and I'm not perfect, don't claim to be, but it worked for me. My child was in front of me. My children were in front of me. They were not allowed to be walking behind me because it's too easy to have been grabbed that way. You know, if you have two adults with you, you put them between you. Now, my kids grew up around them. I never had any of them abduct my children. My granddaughter, when she was 5, her and her 5-month-old brother came and stayed with me for 4 months. And when they did, she was out in front of the house playing and making sandcastles because a lot of my yard had sand in it. I was in the house. I was watching from the kitchen window. I was making her lunch. And I looked out, and I saw a pebble roll from the woods across the ground right up in front of her. And she'd laugh, and she'd roll it back, and pretty soon the pebble would roll to her again. So I ran out there immediately, and I talked to her the whole time. I'm like, hey, Evelyn, I want you to come on right now. Come with Grandma, da-da-da. And we had just seen Alvin and the Chipmunks on movie theater. And she said, Grandma, you have Alvin and the Chipmunks here, only yours are really big. Like, she really believed that they were Alvin and the Chipmunks. They never made an attempt to harm her. They never made an attempt to take her. Because that group, that wasn't something that was acceptable. But, again, with our people, we have pedophiles that kidnap kids on a daily basis. You know, this happens a lot with our people. But that doesn't take away from the people that don't bother children and are good to children. It depends on the individual. It depends on the clan. It depends on the situation going on. Now, if you ever watch David Plotties, he has a ton of them where, you know, these children have literally gone missing, you know, never to be found again. But there's also been just as many accounts of children that have been out camping or out in the woods or whatever with their families and have wandered off, and everybody's thinking they're gone, they're never going to see these kids again, and the Bigfoot's bringing them back. Or they will find them in a swampy area sitting in tall reeds without clothing on, because the Bigfoots will take their own children and put them in the tall reeds like that. So, you know, if there's like a little mound of, you know, grassy area there and there's the reeds there, because it camouflages them. It keeps them safe. They can leave them there while they go hunt, whatever they're going to do, then they go get them later. And these kids have been found like that. You know, there was one situation where the kid was playing out in the backyard with other children, and he vanished from in thin air. I mean, he was just gone. And like 2 or 3 days later, he was returned, and he was right in the yard. There was a little boy in North Carolina about a year or two ago. And he was in North Carolina. He disappeared. They frantically looked everywhere, couldn't find him. When he was found, he was not far from the home, and he talked about this big hairy bear that when he got lost, took care of him and kept him warm and brought him food. And the big hairy bear helped him find his house. Now, anybody that knows anything about bears know that kid would have been eaten in a minute. You know, it obviously wasn't a bear. So, again, it depends on the clan. It depends on the individual. It, you know, there's a lot that comes into play. I wish I could just tell you that there's one way that it would either happen or not happen. And it's just, it's very individualized. They are people. It depends on the type of person they are. It depends on the group. It depends on the clan. It depends on the circumstances. But one way they can take them without getting caught is by cloaking. You had brought that up earlier. There's two ways to cloak. There's the cloaking where they're 100% invisible and you don't see them. The other is a shimmer, and it looks like the predator. That gelled water effect. You know, if they go and put their hand on a child, they can cloak that child just like they're cloaked. All they have to do is get close to them to touch them, and they can do it. Now, Pat and I both have asked them, how do you do it? And they say, you know, we bend the light. Basically, they're bringing their vibrational energy up high enough to bend the light to do this. And we've sat in the house before, and it's very disconcerting to look out in the front yard and see an arm or a leg go by itself across your front yard. I mean, occasionally they don't cover all of themselves. We had a large male that came in to get the food one night at my house in Michigan, and he was new. He was not a regular. I think he was just passing through, and he was extremely hungry and extremely large. And he had the conial head, because they don't all have that. And he went to get food, and I walked outside, and I saw him, and I said, you know that I can see you. And he kind of looked at me, and he instantly cloaked. Well, he cloaked everything but the top of the cone, and he looked like he had a little yarmulke walking through the woods. You know, I mean, it was just really crazy.
So, Robin, I had experience with what I believe to be Bigfoot, and the one thing that struck me about it was, long story short, we saw it up in a cave, me and my friends, and we thought it was wildlife. Uh-huh. But the thing is, generally, if we come across wildlife, we get pretty panicked, right? We're like, oh crap, like, let's get out of here. In this case, we didn't, and we were like walked out, and it wasn't until 5 minutes later did we really start to question. And I always wondered, like, was there some type of psychic effect happening here that kind of like made me, not question it or not afraid or nothing? Because you shouldn't be afraid when you see something 500 pounds up there, right? It didn't make sense in that regard.
It's called trancing, and they can do it at will. They transfer energy into you. It calms you. It makes your brain fully functioning, but your body isn't reactive. And so you don't have that panic effect. They don't do it to be cruel. They do it not only for their own protection, but yours. So that, you know, it's a calmer situation. You can take in what you see. they'll do one of two things. They'll completely swipe your memory so you have no memory of it, or they allow you to see them, but in such a calm manner that you're able to accept what you're seeing. It can wear off immediately. It can last for days. The ETs have the ability to do it as well. All the cryptids can do it.
Yeah, it was interesting that all three of us, like, it was something the size of a grizzly bear in grizzly bear country, and we were totally calm through the experience and didn't even question it until 5 minutes after it happened. And that's the one thing that struck me when it comes to, we were talking about supernatural abilities.
Yeah, it's called trancing. It's called trancing. Okay. And, you know, as far as, like, when they're in cloaks, they can do a number of things that, I mean, they'll never know they're doing it. If they don't go in that gelled mode, that shimmer, and they're in a full cloak, you'll have no clue. Like, they used to come up behind me and pat my hair because they like my hair because it's thick and it's bushy. It reminds them of another Bigfoot. And they would pat my head. Like, I'd be walking around the woods and all of a sudden I'd feel them patting my head. You know, they will come in the house in shadow form. Pat will be asleep and they're forever grabbing his toes. And they think it's fun. They have a wicked sense of humor. Like, it's really warped. But they have a very serious sense of humor. And they'll come in and they're constantly grabbing his toes. You know, I've had them come and put their hand on my thigh. I've had them put their hand on my waist or on my arm, you know, and they will. But they do what's called counting coup. And counting coup, originally it started out that counting coup was a rite of passage where a lot of the children, predominantly more male, would go cloaked up to one of our hairless humans and touch them without being seen. But now they all do it. They all think it's funny when they do, and they will. They'll go up to anybody and touch them. I mean, it doesn't bother them at all because they're cloaked.
Well, that's great. I tell you what, Mark, you've had great questions. I want to get Trey in on this because I know Trey has got some good – he normally has some great questions. You still there with us, our Surgeon General?
I'm still with you, just listening along.
Okay, well,
okay.
You're on the hot seat now with your good questions, okay?
Okay, here's a couple of questions, Robin. You know, I live in an area that's fairly wooded. You don't see a lot of houses around my house. So there's a moderate amount of woods, and we're not remote, but we don't have real close neighbors. You can see the houses, but we're kind of, if you're a Bigfoot, you wouldn't feel like you're in a crowded human population at my house.
Right. You've got a really big reddish one that's got really long hair that's by you.
Oh.
He's huge.
Good to
know. He's got a conial head.
Well, I'm a redhead.
Yeah, he's got
maybe
the conial head.
Maybe we could get along. Here's
exactly.
My question. Let's say, now, this isn't necessarily for me, but it's for other people. What are the cardinal signs that you are in an area frequented by Bigfoot? Are there cardinal signs?
If you're in a wooded area, like let's say you have the woods at your disposal.
Yes.
Look for the structures. Like, you don't have to know what they mean to know they're a structure. A structure, it might even look like it's natural, like it had fallen that way. But what happens is there's always a part of it that's locked. And you can't get it locked with debris falling down. You know, your arches, when you go to the end of that tree where it comes down, you're going to find that it's anchored in some way. It may have a rock. It may have a log over it, and that's looped under the log. I've seen multiple ones where they've taken vines and tied it down. But there's always a way that it's being held down. You know, being from Michigan, we get the snow, and that bends a lot of the trees. People look at these arches that they make and like, oh, that's natural. It's from snowfall. Well, snow doesn't anchor. Okay, so that's where your difference is. You want to look for tree snaps. Tree snaps are a great way to find out whether or not you have them in your area. Because they're literally, even the little trees, are just snapped. So the top of it is snapped off. It's snapped down. So look at that.
The top is snapped and it's folded down so it's parallel with the trunk, but still attached.
Yeah, some of them you'll see where they're snapped and they don't even go parallel. They're just kind of like at an angle, almost like an L-shaped, you know. But, yeah, anything that's snapped like that. And you're going to notice that these things.
And if there's a tree that is arched over, so it creates an arch. Now, when you say
look at where the top of that tree is brought down at, look at it. Is there a log on top of it? Is there a rock on top of it? Is there anything anchoring it down? Because deadfall, weight from snow, all of these things, even the tree dying, is not anchored to the ground. And people don't realize this because they just like, oh, you know, look at it. It's just an arch. You know, it's no big deal. It's natural. It truly isn't, okay? And when I say the things are locked, you will see structures that will look like just branches that have fallen down on the tree. But if you take a closer look, you will see that they're woven. You'll see that they're locked down in a way that only a human hand could undo it. And it would be not possible for it to fall down and do that.
Okay,
and you're going to look on the ground, see footprints, and be aware of your surroundings.
When you say structure, an arch tree, a tree that's bent and weighted down on one end so it creates an arch, how is that a structure per se? To me, it would just be a bent over tree, but there's
right.
no... Structures
are another form of communication for them. They use it to communicate to other members of their clan. They use it to communicate to outside of their clan, to other Bigfoots. They also, some of them, not all, but a few of them are made to communicate even with us. It is another form of communication. And so I call it a structure because these are things that are constructed by them. Okay.
Okay.
You can find anything from
little
tiny.
But it's not like a structure, like a house or a hut or a structure like that.
No, they will make teepees.
It's a construct.
Yeah, they will make teepees. You'll see multiple sticks, branches, whatever, leaned up and made into a teepee. The little ones, because they practice all the time, they'll go gather some smaller, you know, sticks or whatever, and they will put them up and lean them up against each other. So you've got a bunch of them, you know, that are leaned into each other. They have territorial X's that are massive, where you have a pole, a tree on each side, and then a giant X in the middle that is a territorial marker, and it means stay out, and you take that seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only do they not want other clans there or other Bigfoots, they sure don't want you. You know, small X's that you see on the ground, that's a welcome sign. Big X's on the ground still would like you to get out of there. But it's not quite as severe as, you know, the upright. When you see an upright X, that means don't go. You're in the wrong place. You need to go. Get back to your car. Do whatever you got to do. You don't have to panic. You don't got to run at the speed of light. Just turn around and exit. But when you see those poles on either side and then there's that X, it's not just get out. That's a territorial marker. And they are dead serious when they do it. So
now,
it's a matter of just learning the subtle things.
Now, Trey, I'll tell you this. When we were up in Clayton, Georgia, and we went right across the state line, we went to a kind of an area that had a lot of these things. There were X's that, I mean, they're there. And, I mean, it's like, oh, my God, this is, like, really incredible. But they are very much for real. And if everybody wants to go to the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference, to the photographs from 2 years ago, you'll see a ton of these stick structures that they built like right before the conference, and it was amazing. I mean, just it really happened. So I'll just say that. Just go to Tennessee Bigfoot Conference on Facebook, and you can see all. And Robin, you remember those structures, don't you?
Oh yeah, it was fantastic. Well, and the thing is when I lived in Michigan at one of the residents I lived at. I've had them everywhere I lived. I mean, I've never not lived someplace that they weren't there. But the one place that I lived at, I had went out there and I found a couple of structures. There was only one or two that was out there. And I told them, I said, this really makes me happy because I love the structures. I'm obsessed with them. I said, I just love this. Thank you so much. It makes me happy. I went out there the next day, and they must have worked their fingers to the nub, because I went out there the next day, and there wasn't 10 or 15. There was 100 or more easily, and that's without exaggerating. And they very quickly took over my whole woods with nothing but structures. Now, at that point, I didn't know other Bigfoot people. I had never even been on Facebook. And I met Igor Borsov because a friend of mine that I had met, the only person I had ever reached out to about the Bigfoot, had talked to Igor and told him about me, and he asked to meet me, and he came, and instead of, you know, being there 3 days, he stayed, or 3 hours, he stayed 10 days. And I went and I did his conference in Siberia, and then I came back. Well, he's always come to my house since then, and at one trip, he had come to my house at that place, and he said to me, he said, I'm going to go out in the front woods, and I'm going to look at structures, and I said, okay, and he didn't come back, and he didn't come back. So I went out, and I said, are you okay? He's like, yeah, there's just so many. And I said, but this is normal, right? Because I didn't know any different. I was just happy they were making me all these things. I got to be honest with you. I saw some structures in there I've never seen like it anywhere. And so I said to him, I said, this is normal, right? And he looked at me, and he laughed, and he said, there's nothing normal about this. He said, I've been all over the world, and I've never seen structure on top of structure on top of structure like this. Like, they were touching. There were so many structures. You could not turn around. And the thing about structures, don't mess with them. They made them. They mess with them. They're not there for a plane to play. They are not there for our enjoyment. They mean something to them. You don't want to move things. You don't want to be messing with them. You don't want to take them down. Leave them alone. You know, I mean,
so
they do.
You,
it's a form of communication.
Let's say in my on my property,
right.
I might see a structure. And that
sure.
would tell me that there is a Bigfoot. I'm in a Bigfoot vicinity. How do you let them know that you're cool with that? You're not going to run outside and try to shoot them if you see them.
Right.
How do people deal with that?
A couple of ways.
Or if some people might be interested and encouraged to be a Bigfoot booster, but some people might not be, and maybe it would make them feel uncomfortable to have Bigfoot around. How do you communicate with them in a way to say, it's all cool, I'm happy, I'm glad you're here, let's share a beer, really I'd prefer it if you didn't hang around.
Yeah, first of all, they make all the decisions. It's just the way it works. I wish we had more control than we did. And it cracks me up when I see all these people and these researchers, well, I don't allow this and I don't allow that. Well, you know, I have rules for my place too, and it's by the grace of God that I've been okay. But I'm also not dumb enough to think that it's going to matter to them what I say.
Right.
Most of them, I would say 95%, will be respectful of your wishes. You know, I would, if I were you and it was a situation that you didn't mind they were there, you just wanted to be peaceful, and see where it goes. All of these things are telepathic, every damn one of them. The only ones that aren't are the ones that their parents have not taught them that they have that ability. They do possess the ability, but if their parents don't let them know that they have it, they don't know how to use it. So they all are born with it, but they learn how to use it from their parents or whoever raises them or other members of the clan. So if these are
as someone who is not telepathic to my knowledge, if you have thoughts and you speak to them in your thoughts, are they going to be able to pick you up, or do you, as a human,
sure.
do you have to have
you don't
telepathic?
Have to, no, you don't have no. To begin with, my personal belief is that everybody can mind speak. We've been taught not to. I think we have additives in our food that also help block it. But
Okay. Everybody
can. They may not know how. Mind speak comes in multiple forms. It's not just words in your head. It can be a picture. It can be a vision. It can be playing out like a movie. It can be a sense of walking in into an area and knowing the full scope of what went on there and never ever heard a word. It's a knowing. Anything like that is not your own, that you're like, well, why did I think that, or how did that come out of the blue? That's all part of mind speak. So it's pretty vast. So for a person that can't mind speak, you can go out in the woods, you can verbally say, you know, I know you're out there, you can be here, but you have to come in peace. Make sure you let them know that the stipulation is coming in peace.
Okay.
You know, I will not permit being here in a negative way. You know, make those intentions clear. Also, talk in your mind because they are telepathic. And if, you know, there's a few clans that don't use abilities. They're kind of like Amish to us. But always try to speak telepathically and also verbally. There's no reason. If they're around, they're going to hear you. The other thing you can do, if you're wanting them to stay, you know, it's really hit or miss with putting food out, because the problem with having food out is you're never going to feed them enough to sustain their life. You can't. They're too big. But at the same time, it is nice to give them a treat here and there. Some of the clans, not my guys, but some clans will get aggravated when you stop, and that's when the problem occurs. They can do serious damage with the strength they have. The bionic man doesn't have the strength these guys have. And so, you know, if you're just giving them an
occasional you don't want to start something where they could become disappointed later if you stop that behavior.
Right. Now, if you want to go out and put a few apples out, you can. But just as easily, put some white rocks out. White rocks to them is friendship. Okay?
And
some feathers.
I've got a great little dog. He's a terrier. In fact, I'm letting him inside right now. And if there's anything he loves doing, especially when the weather turns cool, he will go outside, and we can hear him barking and running and barking and running, and he'll come back all tuckered out. And we have always assumed, we know we have two deer this summer that showed up because they're baby deer, and they still wander around the neighborhood eating my wife's hostas that she plants out in the yard. so we have these deer. Is it possible that he is chasing a Bigfoot, or would the Bigfoot know he's just a beautiful, friendly little dog, and he's going to leave him alone? And so, what should we do about the dog at night?
Well, here's what I do. Number one, there's multiple people that said that they've killed their dogs. Realistically, and I've watched them do this, I've only seen them kill one time a dog, and there was a group of four, and they killed every one of them. However, and this is where that big buck comes in, these were hound dogs, and I love hounds, it's not that I don't. They were out in the woods doing their job, they were hunting, okay, and they came up on the Bigfoot. They went after their children. They went after them. This happened for days at a time where they couldn't walk through our woods without the dogs attacking. And we would hear them.
So the
them.
Dogs are
dogs
definitely a nuisance and a danger to the Bigfoot.
They were the aggressor.
And their children.
Right. They were the aggressor. And you will see some that will look at a cat and dog and think, oh, it's a free meal. But the majority, you know, I hear people all over the place tell me about that. That's not my experiences. Years ago in 2009, I had people would dump their cats at my house, and I took care of any strays, still do to this day. And it was running around outside. It went out in the woods. It came back, and all the meat had been stripped off its leg in the back. It was stripped, and it was just an actual hot mess. I mean, it was bad. And I didn't know whether or not it was something that the Bigfoots had done, or was it a coyote? I still believe it was a coyote because we had them. But it was obviously a great deal of distress and pain, and it ended up dying. I was so angry. And I went outside, and I knew they could hear me because I knew they were watching me, and I had seen them moving between the trees. And I said, listen, you can be here if you come in peace. These are like my children. Just like I don't hurt your children, you don't hurt my children. You have pets, I have pets. I don't hurt your pets, therefore you may not hurt my pets. And I would remind them of that now and then so they knew. And I would say, I love them. If you hurt them, then you will hurt me because I love them. I have never had a problem since then, never. And
so it might
be a
good
kids.
Idea. It might be a good idea to go outside and just have a conversation and explain
exactly.
that. My dog
you're not
gonna is
hurt
the friendliest
anything.
Dog in the universe. And
Well, they used to steal my Shih Tzu. Mm-hmm. My daughter's Shih Tzu. They would grab her, and I would get so furious because I'm one that I've always had a lot of dogs. My dogs have a fenced in area to be in. If my dogs are loose, you're guaranteed I'm in hot pursuit to get them. I don't just cut my dogs loose. That never happens. It may take me a minute to get them back, but my dogs are not let loose to just do whatever. And they would go out the front door with me, and they'd be running around the yard. And one day the Shih Tzu started barking and ran towards the woods. And I thought, oh, crap, because I knew they were out there. And as soon as she got deep enough in the woods, I heard her yelp. And then all of a sudden she was barking, but she was barking from like 10 feet off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, great. Now they've got her. And I saw movement in the woods, and she was just a barking and a yiping, and it was moving towards the end of the driveway to the road. And I knew I couldn't get there in time. I jumped in her car. I drove to the end of it, and nowhere to be found. And then I heard her barking and yelping, and you could see or hear the voice like somebody was running with her through the woods towards the house. Turned around, went back up the driveway, and it was one of my regular guys, and he put her down on the porch. And I saw him as he left. You know,
so
we have go ahead.
I think what I'm going to do this evening is I'm going to go outside, and I'm going to have a conversation.
Right.
You said there's a pretty big red-headed, conical-headed Bigfoot.
Yeah, he's out
in
there.
Area.
He said his name is Bandon.
Bandon? B-A-N-D-E-N?
B-A-N-D-O-N. Bandon.
Bandon. Like, B-A-N-D-O-N. So if I just go outside and speak with Bandon and let him know, because, you know, he is never bothered me. I will never bother him.
Right. And, you know,
but
they
I don't want to accidentally hurt my dog.
Right.
I should
just
have a conversation with him, say, come in peace. And, you know, you know my dog, certainly, and he doesn't really mean any harm. He just likes chasing deer, and he probably thinks you're a big deer. And that would be a good way to break the ice and just kind of communicate.
You know, you're going to – right. And there are clans that – don't really want to be friends with us and don't want to be friends with our dogs or anything, and they may not listen. But there also are just as many clans that will listen, and you don't know until you try. You know, if they don't get the hint, they don't listen, then there's other things that, you know, we can talk about as far as to deal with it. However, always make your intentions clear. One, they like to be in charge. They will decide when they think you're ready for the next step in your experiences. If they don't feel you're ready, you can beg, plead, promise to sacrifice, or go. It's not going to do you any good. I used to tell them years ago, I know you want me to do something. I just wish you would tell me what it is. You know, and they kept saying, when it's time, when it's time. I hate that saying because they've said it to me since I was a kid. And, but they don't, you know. I mean, people accidentally see them all the time, yes. But as far as that one-on-one experience, they will let you know when it's time. You know, it's like people go running to the woods. I'm going to go out and look for Bigfoot. I'm going to go out and look for Bigfoot. Well, while you're out looking for Bigfoot, Bigfoot's out looking for you because they want to look at you and watch you. They're just as curious as we are.
Right.
Quit running your butts around. Make a bonfire. Sit there. Laugh. Giggle. Cook food over an open fire pit. Trust me, if they're around, they'll be there. The laughter creates a higher vibration, and it raises your energy because it's fun. It's just what it does. That will draw them in all by themselves. The food smell will also draw them in. So, you know, I know people I like going out in the woods too, but when I go out in the woods, I'm not out there looking to see if I can catch one. I go out there and I look for structures. I go enjoy the nature. I look for footprints. Those are realistic things. You know, I mean, lots of people, including myself, have seen them out in the woods, you know, 100%. But, you know, they're not going to let you see anything unless they're ready.
As you get to know a Bigfoot or a tribe or a group, and as they get to know you, eventually, I know from... just our previous conversations, that you've achieved a higher level of Bigfoot interaction than most people in the universe. But do they, that relationship that you have, what do you get something out of it? Did they get something out of it? Or are they just really not really interested in that type of interaction? It's not a quid pro quo? Or
no,
is it just that you can be useful, they can be useful? What are the risk benefits
both.
Of those relationships?
Lots of risk. Lots of risk. I feel personally it's a blessing. I thank God for it because I get to see things and experience things that most people don't, even though I know there's hundreds of thousands of people just like myself. It's not just me. I get to see just an incredible love that they for the people that they care for. I've gone up against the bad ones. I've been called to areas where they have aggressive ones. Not my favorite cup of tea. I can do it. I have done it. And knock on wood. Because it I don't ever say it will always work out because I don't know, but it's been successful. That doesn't mean that it's always going to be successful. For now, it's been good. The interaction that I have some that I've had them around me for years, literally years, and God love them. They follow me everywhere I go. When I moved to South Carolina, I had some that followed me. And when I go back to Michigan, it'll be the same. You know, they'll go back with me. I know that. These guys aren't going anywhere. Where I go, they go. I have four clans here that interact around this area. I've not had problem with aggressive ones. There are aggressive ones, just like there's aggressive people like that we have. But not. I personally don't think there's as many aggressive Bigfoots as there are aggressive hairless humans. Bigfoots, not that it doesn't make me nervous when I get, like, really up close to a very tall one. I am more fearful of our people than I am theirs. Our people, as far as I'm concerned, are literally batshit crazy. And they are even harder to figure out than the Bigfoot. But, I mean, really. But as far as a benefit, I think there is a benefit. Like you said, I feel blessed. They saved my life four times, of which I will always be grateful. They taught me how to do healing work on them, so I do healing work on them. So I've saved a few of their lives as well, and I think they appreciate that. I had a very, very close personal friend say to me once, she said, you know, certain things that they do, they need energy from us and energy from them, but it takes a certain kind of energy. Apparently, I must have it. You know, they'll call me to do things. They'll send me to different areas. They sent me to Tennessee. They sent me to Texas. You know, they've sent me to various places with various work that they need done. I always have the right to refuse. There's only one time that they told me if I didn't go on my own, then they would come and take me. And then they showed me in my mind of them picking me up and off we go type thing. But it was really of great importance to them. There was nothing. I look at it as it's something that will be good for our people as well as theirs. Because I won't turn my back on our people, just like I won't turn my back on theirs. And it didn't harm our people at all.
Anytime you can communicate with anybody, be it a Bigfoot, be it a human, and
right,
you develop
right.
a rapport, if it's a healthy, positive rapport, even if it's just the experience of being kind to another
yeah.
person,
it's really
always
feel
good
like,
for you too.
Yeah, and I feel like it's beneficial. I mean, they've saved my life. They've been good to me. They've helped me with various situations that I can never repay their kindness. I always tell everybody I'm kind of like their puppet, but I in turn do healing for them. If they need something, they know all they simply do is ask. If there's a food they need, they simply ask. I don't put food out like I used to. When I was in Michigan, this was before I met everybody on Facebook and talked to other researchers. I put enough food out there. You have no idea how much food. It was ridiculous. I spent literally over $200 a week on food for them. And it wasn't that I didn't think they could get food. It was I didn't want anybody getting caught getting food. Like they'll go into the barns and they'll steal hay and they'll steal grain, you know, or they'll grab a cow or a chicken or whatever. I mean, chicken houses, they love chicken houses. They'll go in there. There's so many chickens that they can get a dozen chickens and nobody notices they're gone. you know. But I really have, I think, I feel like I have a good relationship with them. We have ducks here. They've never bothered our ducks. They've never taken the duck eggs. I have large cages that have outdoor cats in them. They go in there all the time, and they take the cat food. And then they fill the bucket with pine cones. It's a riot. No pine cones can get in this cage because it has a top to it and sides. But yet I can go in there, and all the cat food will be gone, and they've replaced it with pine cones. You know, they come up to my house. They'll come look in the window at night. You know, I mean, I feel like I have a good relationship with them. There's times that I really wish that it was even deeper, because I feel like no matter how good it is, you always want that little bit more. Now, the ones in Michigan.
Well, I think it's natural too that at a certain point you'd really like to have more of a conversation than perhaps they're willing to give you.
You know. Yeah, and the thing is they'll answer you questions, but, you know, people are like, oh, they'll tell me anything. I don't buy that for one red hot second, because they're not going to tell you everything. They're not going to give you the golden goose that lays the eggs. They're just not. Will they answer questions? Yeah, but they speak in circle talk, so you've got to pick it apart. Their words don't mean the same as ours. Their phrasing doesn't mean
like
the same as ours.
So it's kind of like talking to a lawyer.
Exactly. Only you'd have better luck with a lawyer. And, you know,
they're not going to speak in English. It's a lot of circular talking. And when you finish, you aren't really any more clear than you were to begin with, because that's just the nature of the beast. I wonder if there's a Bigfoot law school where they learn this talent.
I wish there was a book for this stuff, because all the books I've seen are about half right from what I've learned. And that doesn't mean that I'm never wrong. I'm not saying that. I'm not an expert. Never will claim to
be. Well, I don't think this is the first time you've heard this advice from me, is there could be a book about this. And I have to.
I know.
I've got to
do it.
I mean, that is inside you, Robin. You can't slide out without writing that book.
I know. And, you know, there's two books that have to be done. First is the book that I would put out to the public, just things I've learned, which, you know, a lot of researchers are going to look at and say, yeah, you know, I've learned that. I've learned more than that. That's fine. But tips of the trade kind of thing out there that will help people. So, like, in my case, I went most of my life by myself figuring it out. I didn't have anybody to go to. Didn't know about Facebook. Didn't know about other researchers. So 98% of the stuff that I know, I got on my own. The other 2%, you know, I got, well, actually, I would say 75% I got on my own. Another 20% I got from a very dear friend of mine that helped me and still does. And the other percentage is strictly from them. Now, they've taught me a lot. I will say that. They've really, really taught me a lot. Like, they know what they want me to know. They know what they want me to do. And they have no problem showing me how to do it. But their favorite line that I get is, we need you to do da, 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 da. And I'm like, okay, but I don't know how to do that. And instead I get, you will when it's time. You will when it's time. And I hate it. It drives me crazy. But the truth of the matter is, they're right. Certain situations will happen, and I automatically react, and I do it. And I'm like, didn't know I had that ability. That's kind of cool. You know, but it helps. It just happens. Like, I don't get it. I'm never going to understand it, but it just happens. But, I mean, I think they get stuff out of it as well. Like I said, I think the healing helps them. Number one, they don't have to use their own energy. Number two, it's possible that in certain healing situations, it's their energy and my energy combined that will do it on some of the tougher jobs, you know, gunshot wounds, that kind of thing. And so there is a benefit. I think there's one out in the front yard right now because I'm seeing all these shadows moving. And
he's probably
so,
there asking you to write this book, and I think you could write a book called
and I've had so many people
coexisting and communion with Bigfoots, a human's guide, and that's for the general population.
That'd be a good name. And the thing of it is, and I have a very very lovely man that contacted me very recently, and he's like, you know, I saw you on a podcast, and all these things are going on. I'm so sorry to bother you. Is it possible I can talk to you? Just because, you know, I want you to maybe help me formulate what is really going on here. You know, I think he's gotten as far as he can in physical parts, and now it's gone a step further. And most people don't even need me to do anything. It's just they need to download and know they're not nuts. This stuff is so real, it's not even funny. And we've talked about this before. The world that we see is not real. It's an illusion. What's really going on out there would stop their breathing. But it doesn't – just because it doesn't look like us doesn't mean it's not kind. You know, the dog men get such a bad rap. I hate it. There are some that are really, really bad. I get it. But there's also some that are really sweet. Like, I have had them help me before. You know, I've had their children in my backyard. Of course, I have had the Bigfoot kids back there, too. But, you know, I mean, they're not all bad. I have one that sits relatively close to the end of my driveway just across the street, and he stands guard, you know. I've got Bigfoots that stand guard as well. But, and for the most part, I would say 98% of the time they're pretty effective. That other 2%, I don't know if they're out on a coffee break or what, but I'll wake up and there's an ET stand next to the bed. But, I mean, I think it's mutually beneficial for both of us. I mean, they've kept me alive. I've almost died 4 times, and they've brought me and saved me each time. So, you know, I try to reciprocate that for them. And they want me to tell people what they are, what they really are. They're not monsters. They're never going to be monsters. The only time they're monsters is when our people push all those buttons enough to turn them into that.
And when you look at the popular press, and when you look at stories and people on hunts and stuff like that, they're made out to be a boogeyman. I think that would help people get a better perspective of the interaction between Bigfoot and humans, and that would be a service to both Bigfoots and humans. And it's inside you,
exactly.
Robin.
And Representative Humphreys. And this is just the FYI, Representative Humphreys out of Oklahoma had put together, and probably a year or so ago, I mean, it wasn't like it was last week, had decided that he was going to sell tags to hunt and kill them. His thinking, his moronic thinking was nobody's going to get one anyway. It's going to bring business to Oklahoma because, you know, due to COVID and everything, everything's been shut down. Tourism is down. We need to make revenue. So we'll do it off the Bigfoot. Number one, that never goes well. Never. You're allowed, the rules for that are, you know, if you're making products and you're selling, like, you know, little stickers or whatever, they don't care. They don't. You're allowed to make a little bit of money on what you're doing. John does these conferences, and they're perfectly fine if he can make a dollar at it, because while he's doing that, he's spreading the word. They consider him a messenger. And the truth about them is coming out. However, they do not want, nor do they accept, us making money off their back, and I don't blame them. You know, so we have this Representative Humphreys that's now going to go in, sell these tags, and the tag will be your certificate, you know, will be like a souvenir type thing, and you get to go up and you try to tag a Bigfoot. The researchers are outraged, to say the very least. Everybody was scrambling around. I got very lucky. I was able to locate the phone numbers not only for his office but for 3 other people, and I called him. They wouldn't put me through. They refused. They talked to the secretary multiple times. I was the last person on the planet she wanted to talk to. I was, however, able to get hold of another representative who was tremendous, just absolutely tremendous. And he called me back. I had no problem getting through to him. And I told him, I said, it's bad enough that he's looking to put tags on these things. I said, if you don't want to look at it as a moral human level, that you're going to be killing another human, because you are. I did send Humphreys, and all of them got a copy of the DNA report. And I said, are you aware of the danger you're putting innocent people in? Okay, these things can pick up a car and throw it. They can dismantle anything in under a second. They can take infrasound and energy and vibrations from their body, and they can zap you and stop your heart, and you won't even have a chance, and they don't have to get near you to do it. Like, you're sending innocent people into the mountains to go up there to try to kill them, and they're more at risk. Like, I just can't comprehend this. And he said, well, he was not going to allow anybody in his precinct to even entertain this thought. He was completely against the whole hunting of them. And he said that he was going to talk to his other constituents and make sure that it did not go through. And it didn't go through. He kept his word, and God bless that man. He was tremendous, and he helped, and it didn't get done. And I talked to some other researchers that also were in on wanting to stop it, and, you know, they got the same thing. They said, we're not doing it. They no sooner got done with that, and this Mr. Humphreys has now decided to start up another one. And they aren't taking any calls whatsoever from anybody. I don't know that it will ever go through after what happened the last time and the amount of opposition that they got, I guess is the best word. I really don't see it as going through. But this man was willing to kill them, kill their families, so he can make a buck. You know, there's
I think you ought to come out with a product line of clothing that is designed for Bigfoots. So you'd put it in the extra, 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 extra.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
T-shirt.
Yeah, most
size.
Of them won't wear them, but
and on the
you
front
know,
of it,
you
and on the
see
front
see
of it,
see
you
some
could.
That will.
And on the front of the T-shirt, you ought to put, "Go ahead, underestimate me. This will be fun."
Yeah, that's exactly that's brilliant. I love that. That is absolutely
well,
brilliant.
Well, I saw the T-shirt.
It's true.
It's not an original idea, but I saw that T-shirt for humans, but it sounds like it'd be a great Bigfoot T-shirt for Bigfoot to wear.
It would be perfect.
Go ahead,
because
underestimate me. Yeah. This will be fun.
And there are some that have been killed. They've caught them off guard, or they have these abilities. And like when I do healing on them, a lot of times I do the healing work, and I do the healing. I work with not only Pat, but a very, very dear friend of mine, Wanda, and we all mind speak, and anytime we're giving information that's really vital or important, we all will get it from them. And if we don't all get the same thing, we know they're lying, because they are notorious liars. And so
sounds like
that way we know that it's accurate. Oh yeah, so much like that. Yeah. And you know, I mean, it's sad, but it's true. You know, most of them, like the ones that I'm very close to, if they told me that the sky is going to rain purple, I would believe it, because they've never lied to me. I've known them for years. They've saved my life. They've been good. They've been honest, and I can trust them. But the majority of them, I don't have that faith in. And, you know, so you just have to kind of judge it by the individual. Are they being honest with you? Are they not being honest with you? Personally, I can feel it when they are. But Pat and Wanda and I, we verify everything. And if we don't all three get the same thing, it's not happening. If they have a job for me to do and I can't get clearance from all three of us and we all got the same thing and nothing and everything matches, I'm good. If nothing matches, no way. You know, I mean,
Robin,
always,
you know, you leave me with more questions, but the revelations that you describe, and to tell me how on a practical nature to deal, not to deal with, but to interact in a peaceful and respectful manner with Bigfoot is so appreciated. And I know humanity
thank you.
Would like to share.
I appreciate that.
You need to share
that
with them too.
Yeah, and I told you guys this before. I know I did on one of the other shows we did. My neighbor, and this is a perfect example. This is why I keep bringing this up when I do podcasts. My neighbor, who is an absolutely lovely woman, her and her grandson live next door to me, and her adult sons don't live there. And her grandson came over one day and said, you know, Miss Robin, come talk to Grandma quick. And I said, is she all right? And he's like, oh, yeah, but what your friends have been to my house. Now, prior to this, when we moved in, I only knew this woman for 3 months. And I thought something compelled me to tell her this stuff. And I'm like, listen, I really like you. I do want to be your friend. I'm not, you know, someone that needs to be into an institution. But I am here, okay? It is only a matter of time. You're going to see them. And I don't want you to be afraid. Don't feel that you're crazy. Don't be afraid. And for the love of God, unless your physical body is in danger, don't pull out a gun, because you're looking at a war you'll never win. Even if you get hold of one and you kill it, there's going to be 100 more that are going to be coming for you. And they don't let it go. They look at things as an eye for an eye. And so she was like, okay. And she said, you know, if anybody else would have told me this, I would have never believed him. But she said, for some weird reason, I believe you. And I said, well, I appreciate that. I'm not making it up. Who wants to be thought they're crazy? Nobody. So then you fast forward 3 years, and then her grandson comes over. So I went over there, and I said, are you all right? And she was grinning ear to ear. She said, yeah. Her grandson was out in the yard, and one walked out of the tree line, looked at him, and walked into my backyard and then into my woods. And I said, what did it look like? And he said, well, it looked like a big giant gorilla is what it looked like. And I was like, oh, okay. So there's that. And then I went in and talked to the grandmother, and I said, was it okay? Nobody got hurt, right? She said, oh, no, not at all. She said, her son was out back. They were getting ready for a wedding reception. Her son was out back, and he was throwing brush into the woods. And he heard a growl, and he looked up, and here's this just enormous black Bigfoot staring at him, literally staring at him. And he was like, oh, my God, what do I do? He didn't know what to do. He didn't know what to say. So he stood there, and they stared at each other. And then she said, he took off. So we went to this reception, and her son was there, and I said, I heard you saw one of my buddies. And he said, oh, my gosh. He said, Robin, he said, honestly, I've always believed the things that you say, but I had a hard time accepting that they were here in the South. And he said, I saw it. It was right there. Like, it was close enough to touch. And I said, well, when it took off, did it leave on two or four legs? And he said, well, that's the thing. He said, I've never seen anything that could move that quick. And I said, yeah, but how did it leave? And he said, well, it was there 1 second and gone the next. I said, you never saw it run off? No, not at all. I said, it never did. It was close. That's all it did was phase out while it was standing in front of you. And he was floored, just floored. He said, that makes sense, because he said, I never saw it leave. Never.
It just vanished.
It just vanished. And I know when Shadow came out of the woods, he was, at that time, he was probably a teenager, early 20s at the time, and he come out, and he stood like 10 feet from me, and he was in full physical form, and he was standing there, and my son was coming through the tall grass, and there was one that was doing the belly crawl in front of him, and we had another one that we named Betty was on the other side. It was like wall-to-wall Bigfoot, and I didn't want him scared. And when they do the belly crawl, it's not uncommon for them to grab your feet, pull them out from under you so you fall on your butt because they think it's funny. And I hollered to him, and I said, there's one on its belly in front of you. I don't want you frightened. It's okay. I want you to just come straight towards me. And I was keeping an eye on the one on the ground, and then Shadow was standing 10 feet from me. So I'm kind of looking at him and watching the one on the ground at the same time. When I hollered to my son, it terrified Shadow, just scared him. He cloaked. I watched him cloak right next to me. I was so sad because he was so close, and then I scared him, and he cloaked. But, yeah, it's pretty amazing when they do it. It really and truly is. I had one that ran in front of a car that was ahead of me, and the car hit their brakes. They didn't even know what they were hitting the brakes from. They just saw something that was in that gelled form, like a predator form, cross in front of the car, and they actually hit it, and it did this drop and roll type thing, and when they hit it, it uncloaked. It jostled it enough where it couldn't focus enough to stay cloaked, and so, for a few moments there, you could see it, and then it recloaked again and took off in the woods, and they've done that here. Like, I went to go leave one night, and I was literally just not even 100 feet from my driveway. And a big nail, a deer came running out like something was chasing it. And it came out of the weeds in the trees. And when it did, it landed in the middle of the road. And it just took off on the other side, and a Bigfoot followed it. It was pretty funny because he took off from the side of the road, and he was cloaked. But then he uncloaked, turned his head, looked at the car, and it was that total oh shit moment. And he leaped up in the air to go back into the woods, and when he did, he uncloaked.
Interesting.
Wow, Robin, I tell you what, that's a great story. I hate to tell everybody this, but we might have to be done because we're over our time limit, and we have had a wonderful time talking with you about
about Bigfoot. So number one, our big thanks are to you for being our guest tonight, and you'll be a co-host next week. Is that okay?
Yeah. Thank you so much,
John.
Mark, are you on Facebook?
Yes, I'm on Facebook, Friends of John. I'll look you up and add you as a friend tonight.
Yeah, I'm under Robin Haynes McCray.
Okay.
So, yeah, look me up. Any questions? If I have the answer, I'm happy to share it. If I don't, I will be the first one to say I don't know it, but I'll find out for you.
It's really interesting to hear all your stories and explanations. You know, a lot of it's out there, could be perceived as out there, but I think due to the nature of the topic, and which is, I think, valid, you know, it's nothing's too far-fetched. And thank you for answering my questions. It was really enlightening.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Yeah, no, these things, any of these cryptids, any of all of that, the amount of abilities they have is literally mind-shattering. I never say never with them, because every time I think I figured out all the abilities, I find out there's 100 more that I don't know about. It's like the bottomless pit. And no matter how much you know, all you're going to get is more questions.
Absolutely.
That's exactly right. So, Mark, it's great to have you on here. It was wonderful. We're sorry Devin had to get on a plane for London. He was he didn't get this great interaction and stuff. And Trey, thanks for your wonderful questions.
I would like to stay on longer, but I got to go out into the backyard and talk to Bandon and just to tell him that I'm happy that he's here.
I definitely would. You know, not all the clans, but some of them really will listen. I mean, I have 15 dogs here. They don't bother my dogs. It doesn't mean they haven't gone outside and picked them up. I've seen them do it. But I've not had any problems ever. In fact, they're forever bringing stuff and tossing it in the fence so that my dogs will play with it. It drives me nuts, because the one day I do a walkthrough every day to make sure there's nothing new that they've thrown in there, because I never know what they're going to throw in there. I mean, they've thrown in flower pots, shoes, anything that the dogs would think will play with. And they're always throwing sticks in there for the dogs to play with. There was nothing in the backyard. It was perfectly fine. I walked in the house. 10 minutes later, I went outside, and my Pyrenees is walking around with a 2x4 in her mouth. We're talking a fully, like, this thing was over 6 foot long, a 2x4 that they grabbed from somebody's place, and they tossed it in the backyard. She's dragging the 2x4 all around. And I'm thinking they need to get me a bigger board, because they went under my deck, and one of the yahoos tried to stand up underneath the deck and hit their head on the bottom of the deck, totally split and broke the panel of wood, just broke it in half. Like, I'm laying in bed and I hear this kaboom, and I'm like, what in the world? Can't find out where it is. I go outside on the deck the next day, and the board's just split in two. And it was whoever did it, they did it from underneath of it, because it was pushed up and just completely shattered it and busted it.
Well, and Robin, I'll say this. I have stayed at your house so many times. I have had so many experiences. Everybody needs to understand the things you are saying are true. They're absolutely true.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
I've done that. I've had my experiences in the Clayton, Georgia area. And it's amazing. This stuff is all real. It gets to where I get all these emails and these messages from these Bigfoot groups, and they want to show stuff. It's like, who cares? I've already seen it all. You know what I mean? That's
terrible. And the thing of it is, I say I've seen all these things, and people are like, yeah, right. No, I actually have photos. You know, are they the greatest pictures in the world? No, but you definitely are going to see what they are. You know, like with Lizard Man, I didn't even know he was back there. I got the photo of him accidentally. How many people actually have a photo of a Lizard Man? Not a drawing, not a cartoon, but an actual photo. You know, I have pictures of portals opening in my front yard. I have a picture that has a UFO above the portal and a head coming out of the portal. Like, I'm not making this stuff up. I have witnesses to it.
Robin, stop. You are preaching to the choir. Well, anyway, we're going to get Trey down there, and we're going to have a wonderful day. And I might have my buddies from Alabama come up, because I'll tell you what, they are dying to meet you. Our sorcerer from last week, and his buddy, they are dying to meet you and see Bigfoot. So we'll get all that worked out. And all I've got to say is I want to thank Mark, and I want to thank Trey, and, of course, Robin, our guest inquisitor tonight. We are so glad to have every one of you on tonight on the one, the only ScaryCast, WTWW Nashville. We're on worldwide shortwave radio. Take care, everybody. And I got news. We'll see you next week. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Good night. Bye.